Hello and welcome back to the Pre-Construction Podcast. Happy New Year. It's Gareth McGlynn here with all your pre-construction crack. Delighted to be back. I took an extra long break this year. If anybody knows me, I always go back to Ireland for Christmas. It's a magical time of the year, not only for my kids, but I go back there and catch up with family, friends, and generally, because there's been so much kind of a brain drain from Ireland over the last 15, 20 years, everybody always comes back and catches up at Christmas, so it's a magical time. I hope you had a great time. I'm back, I'm refreshed, I'm in my fitness kind of regime, so really looking forward to this year, bringing you loads of great, great guests. Looking forward to this year, I'm looking forward to Advancing Pre-Construction again. It is in Denver from May 1st to May 3rd. If anybody's thinking of going, can't wait to see you there. If you haven't bought your tickets yet, I'm working with Advancing Pre-Construction to get as many people there as possible. So I've got a discount code that will get you 10% discount. So when you're online, you're buying your tickets, it will ask you for a discount code. Put in podcast10, all one word, simply podcast and the number 10 for a 10% discount on your ticket price. I'll be there. I'll be launching a very special, I don't want to give too much away, a special product to people, and it's all to do with the Pre-Construction Podcast. I'll be recording episodes there as well, so looking forward to seeing you there. Anyway, back to my guest today. Today's guest I actually met at Advancing Pre-Construction last year in Phoenix, Arizona. Great time. He is currently pre-construction director with Thomas Construction in North Carolina. His name is Michael Pritt. Very interesting background. Worked with a family business. His father owned a construction company. Him and his brother then went into business, sold that business. Then he actually went out of construction for a few years, bought a plastics business, reinvigorated that, sold it after 3 years, and is now back in construction. Specifically, pre-construction, has had a couple of estimator roles, senior project manager roles, VP, and now with Thomas Construction. We go through five key points. The first one is CM at risk. The delivery method that is really popular and really successful in the public sector goes through that in great detail, the GMP and the risk involved in CM at risk. He then talks about the private sector going from hard bid to negotiated, how they've mastered that. He then talked about the idea of general contractors marketing themselves, and not just marketing themselves as a recruitment tool, but marketing themselves to prospective clients and being very targeted, being very consistent with the message and getting work on through clients through targeted social media. Very interested on that. He then talked about market sectors, so behavioral health, medical and senior living all over the US, and then just expansion plans in relation to Thomas Construction. Really interesting guy. Stay tuned as well for the questions at the end. And as always, a quick shout out to both our sponsors. That's Beck Technology and Concentric.
Stuck in spreadsheets? Tired of the endless loop of copying and pasting? Now imagine all your estimating workflows in one program. Beck Technology's innovative Destiny Estimator software streamlines the entire estimating process. With intuitive tools and powerful analytics, you can create accurate and reliable estimates quickly and easily. We understand the challenges pre-con teams face because we were born from construction. When you are ready to streamline your estimating effort, visit us at beck-technology.com and talk with a tech expert in a Destiny Estimator demo today.
Michael Pritt, welcome to the Pre-Construction Podcast.
Well, thank you, Gareth. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Brilliant. Well, myself and Michael actually met at Advancing Pre-Construction this year. Sorry, last year. It's already 2024, believe it or not. And we had a great conversation. And it's something that I wanted to come back to. So delighted to get you back here on so early in the year, because I know you've got some exciting stuff to talk about in relation to how general contractors, construction management firms market themselves in the current social media era. So before we do that, let's take it all the way back. Coming out of high school, going into college or deciding what you want to do, talk to me about graduating from Malone University.
Well, you're bringing me back quite a ways, Gareth. So I came out of high school. I actually first went in through trade school. So I'm kind of a unique in that regards. Probably one of the few left that actually went through trade schools and then went into real estate. Coming and went to school, came out of there, and was in real estate because it was kind of my father was engaged in real estate and development and did some commercial developments on it on his own. In addition to, he owned a construction company as well. So that's kind of started there working in high school as a part-time job. Sweeping floors, loading trucks, unloading trucks, got promoted to scrapping jobs out eventually and get to used to. So that's kind of where my field experience started. But the real estate thing was just kind of a piece and, as they call it today, side hustle, right? And so got some experience to understand how things worked, and it was great experience for me.
Brilliant. I mean, we always talk, you see me on social media on LinkedIn talking about the importance of the trades. I mean, to me, not enough people are going into the trades and staying in the trades. But the other thing is there's not enough people going into the trades, progressing through the trades, and then coming back into pre-construction and estimating on the mechanical and electrical side.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree.
What trade did you go for, Michael?
So actually it was a building and services trade. So kind of
Brilliant.
cut, ran the gamut with everything, which was, I still going back to that in my field experience, and though it's been a while, I credit that with one of the things that greatly helped me in every role that I've had since, because I was always able to talk to subcontractors and have some understanding when they would tell me things. And so it was a great base to build on.
Brilliant, brilliant. I mean, having your father own a company and going in and being able to wear as many hats as possible, it must have been a great grounding for you and a great basically training and development as a pre-construction or a construction professional.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it was, a joke about kind of the not so fun jobs and parts of it, right? But ultimately working through all aspects, understanding APAR, understanding staff management, understanding the legal end of things. Those were all foundational in terms of being able to progress in the industry for me.
Brilliant. And the training was that good that yourself and your brother started a construction firm. Is that right? The entrepreneurial spirit was alive and well in the second generation.
Yeah, well, my brother was a real smart guy. So he initially started a company dealing with machine control systems and construction lasers. And so we started that company, and he and I worked together for several years on that before ultimately selling it off to one of the competitors in the market. So yeah,
Brilliant.
another great experience. I got a chance to get out there and kind of beat the street when they first came out with the cell phones, right? And finding my way around and got in the sales game, and we had some fun with that one for a while.
Very good, very good. But the lure of the construction industry I know you had kind of had a small stint with a plastics company as well. Talk us through that or how that came about.
You're doing your homework. So there was after getting out of the laser business, there was probably my only stint outside of the construction industry for me. We bought a plastics company that manufactured flower pots and buckets, basically. And it was a small little company, ran a shift a day. And, we ultimately turned it around into a 7-day week, 3 shifts a day, and ultimately sold that company off to who was our largest client at the time, started making their own flower pots and buckets. So,
Brilliant. Very good. Very successful. Love it. So let's go back to then construction, because obviously you saw everything. You were working with your father, you were working with your brother. You'd seen anything from the finance, the legal, the marketing, the pre-construction, the construction. What brought you back in 2007, I think it was, back into the industry as an estimator at Shelco? Why pre-construction at that stage? Because with your background, you could have went anywhere and done anything. Why pre-construction?
yeah, I think, after, moving back even before that, I'd gotten back into the construction industry with with one of the large builders in the market that I was in Northern Ohio. And, just really loved it and realized how much I missed just kind of being there and seeing things get put together and of course progressed on larger and larger projects, and got to, more experience in the industry. Ultimately, when I came down to North Carolina, so it's been, been a long time now, but came down and met with the folks at Shelco, and my wife and I were talking about wanting to get out of the northern area and the snow and the cold and all that fun stuff. So we just made the move, and kind of has worked well ever since. Again, taking opportunities as they came along, and certainly through a turbulent market from the 08 to the 2010, 11, for a lot of us guys with gray hair, we remember it well. But yeah, I just loved getting back into it and understanding and being around the people and seeing things come together.
Brilliant, love it. Because you went then from Shelco to a small stint with the an REIT, so Associated States Realty Corp. Obviously, being on the real estate, that's what you kind of studied. How different is it in the general contractor side and then the developer side? What is the big differences?
Well, I mean, from an ownership role, one with that particular role for me personally was tough. It was travel. I would land and I would fly from Cleveland to Baltimore in a day and turn around the next day and fly to LA for 2 weeks. And, it takes some time. So there was a lot more, it was a little bit more of a pressure cooker, a little more stress to the end result, ultimately building for yourself or building for the company. It really left very little room for mistake, right? So as a general contractor, certainly we're limited. We have to be accurate. We have to be good at what we do. But as an owner, which Associated States was one of the largest multifamily operators at the time, there was just little room for error. And so, every penny from the investment side was just counted. Everything was scrutinized. It's a publicly traded company. So, it was a lot of, I tell you, I have a lot of respect for a lot of those folks because I think that some of them make it really look easy. Some of them make it look like it's, easier than it really is behind the scenes because it's a high pressure cooker and a lot of long days and a lot of airline miles.
Yeah, tough. It's a tough gig. Everyone thinks it's brilliant when you're going and working the developer. They see all the shiny stuff and on the social media and stuff, but it's a tough grind.
That's right. I mean, it's, again, Associated States was a big company, but there were teams of lawyers, teams of accountants, teams of, leasing agents, and so kind of managing all those things in between. It's a tough road to hoe sometimes.
Brilliant. And what delivery method did you guys use? Because I know looking at your background, you're very heavy on CM at risk.
Yeah, so on the ownership side, it was strictly self-built, right? So it was. Yeah, so we actually would price the projects out ourselves. We would actually hire the contractors and ultimately build it ourselves. And that was kind of really where my role was as a senior project manager, was to travel around, meet with the on-site project management teams. So we acted as kind of an internal GC for the ownership group there. But yeah, the CM at risk component, really, when I came down to the North Carolina market, that was really exploding. That was getting larger and larger. And of course, project sizes, were fairly large at that time. They've come down over the last 15 years or so. Yeah, the CM at risk, it's if in the Carolina market, you absolutely have to be well versed in it.
Yeah, and just probably started in around 2010, 2011. What was the big uptake, or why was there a big uptake at CM at risk? And what are the risks of delivering through that methodology, aside from your traditional hard bids?
Well, I think, each area of the market's a little bit different. So from Cleveland to Carolinas to LA to each place has a little bit of a different approach to what they call and what they label as CM at risk. In the Carolinas, a lot of it really got instigated by some changes, some challenges, if you will, in terms of the public bid market. So these large projects were facing challenges by accepting just the outright low bidders. Sometimes the lowest price isn't necessarily the best way to go, right? So that instigated a change in the public side. And the CM at risk, really, it allowed folks to have some say in exactly how they selected the contractors. It was based on qualifications at that point versus just a low number. So completely transparent. It's managed by State Construction in this market. And it's probably the best bang for the buck in terms of public dollars being invested because it's transparent. But at the same time, you're getting folks that are projects. And so when you're building a, $100 million museum or a $100 million high school or those kinds of things, it's very important that contractors are qualified, vetted through, scopes of work are cleaned up, scope gaps are mitigated. And so that's the best delivery method for those types of projects. It really mirrors, what we try to do on the private side, controlling the timeline of design, weeding out the challenges, the obstacles, vetting out the schedules. And so it really mirrors that in a public way with everything transparent out there. The risks, when you go to GMP on a public CM at risk project, you own that GMP. So at that point, now if there are holes, if you have not done your due diligence or there is a schedule impact, those things become the problem of the construction manager. So that's kind of where that risk comes into play. So you really have to do your job well on the front end to make life on the back end attainable.
Brilliant. Yeah, skin in the game, and that's what it's all about. And if they
Absolutely.
see you've got skin in the game, they're going to be more and more that happy for you to go at it. And again, once you've got the best pre-construction estimators who've got good experience in CM at risk, then you should be very confident, and the risk should be very low.
That's right. And I mean, and again, like all teams, it's better served when it's collaborative and you have the project manager and you have a super, so, we do this with every project superintendent sitting at the table and how we're literally going to build it piece by piece and how assemblies go together. And again, all that upfront work mitigates the challenges on the backside.
Brilliant. Yeah, it seems to be CM at risk on the public side, and then negotiated on the private side, or design build on the private side. Seems to be the two, the most popular and the most well-versed delivery methods right now.
It is, and it's challenging, right? As we move into the markets, I mean, time frames are getting condensed, schedules are getting condensed. There's obviously challenges in the marketplace right now, but getting that upfront work done, and that's one of the things that we've really focused on through our target value delivery method that we promote within, is finding that target, identifying what that budget is, and designing to that budget. Versus, everybody hurry up, let's get to the finish line and find out, uh-oh, we have a problem.
And I think that's where the specialty contractors come in, being able to deliver it all the time. I mean, I forgot to mention, but Michael is now at Thomas Construction as pre-construction director. Now, specifically, you're looking at medical, senior living, and behavioral health. And that's the kind of areas that you guys specialize in. Talk to us about those three areas in particular. Why those areas, and why did Thomas decide to go down those?
Well, I think it's all the pieces coming together, right? So it's we do corporate office, we do multifamily for select clients. We do, we're diversified in our project types. We even do a little bit of public work still here in the Wilmington market, and a little bit in Raleigh as well. But we focus on those because, one, we're real good at it. We have experience doing it. And two, the client base is the type of client that we target. We're working up front. They understand, they understand we know what we're doing, and speaks to that kind of that design build approach that you mentioned. And for us, we see them as strong sectors. We see it right now, for a lot of folks that maybe put all their eggs in one basket of multifamily, or some folks that are maybe over-focused on the corporate office environment. And those markets are really struggling, as we all know. Even in strong markets such as North Carolina, there's still some struggle there. So we look at the behavioral health, the medical, of course, and senior living is growing exponentially over the course of the next 10 to 12 years. We've really built our strategies around servicing those clients, doing it well. And again, there are specific types of jobs that you really need to have the right people. You need to hire the right project managers, hire the right estimators who understand how to put it together, hire the right superintendents, et cetera. So we've built and structured our team around that. And so that's why we focus on that, because frankly, we're good at those components.
Yeah, that's it. It's about staying within your swim lanes. I mean, if you're good at it and it's repeatable, you can use the pre-construction data, the historical data. The clients are just much more comfortable doing it. And at CM at risk on the public side, and then negotiated on the private side, everyone feels much more comfortable in a collaborative environment like that.
It is, and I think that's where you garner the greatest success, right? Is when you come to the table, when you have clients that you're comfortable with, they trust you. There's an understanding that you're all in it for the same reason, which is to have a successful outcome to it. And so, they get comfortable with how we approach things and how transparent we are with our project approach. they get comfortable that our accuracy on the pre-construction side is, top tier and first in class. And then they get comfortable that we deliver a project on time. And so that is, to your point, it's very repeatable. There's a comfort level there, and it ends up in a success for all of us.
Brilliant, love it. So listen, we had a good chat in May back in at the Advancing Pre-Construction in 2023. We had challenges back then when it came to pre-construction, daily challenges. What are you seeing now, Q1 2024? What do you see in the future? What are the challenges that every pre-construction department is going through? How are you finding the market?
I think we pretty much hit it. Back in May when we talked about what the challenges were going to be in terms of the market, we kind of discussed that there would likely be a plateau in terms of marketing or in terms of the dollars and cents, the escalation we were seeing, and that's occurred. We saw the dip in the rates. There's possibility of those going back up, and so I look at it a little bit more. It's specific right to my chair, and so I say that because we all know about those challenges in the marketplace, and somebody had asked me, a fellow I had mentored a couple months ago, asked me, says, what's your challenges today? And so I started to see, this great, wonderful, spectacular, detailed answer about interest rates, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, that's all great, Mike. What about your challenges? What are your problems? And so it kind of got me to thinking about that. And we're fortunate, right? Thomas Construction Group's very fortunate. Our backlog is strong. Our financial stability is spectacular. We got a great client base. And because of the great job that our recruiting and our HR has done, we've got a wonderful staff, and I've got people that I love working with, and they're very intelligent. My chair, it's tough managing all those expectations. It's tough managing the expectations that come from my colleagues. It's tough managing the expectations that come from ownership. Our executive team puts a lot of pressure on ourselves to manage those expectations. And that kind of ties to one of the things I know you and I've spoke about a lot about, obviously, is recruiting, right? And getting the top talent in here, but then keeping them. And so it's real, it's great. And there's some firms that are out there throwing money, and that works in some cases, but it's about how do you make people happy with what they're doing and then set them up to be successful in what they're doing. So that's kind of where when I say it's from my chair, that's really what my job is now, right? It's to make sure that people have the tools that they want. It's to make sure that we're focused on client success, and that the people in the building are set up to create success and be successful themselves. So that's the biggest challenge. I think most people are still faced with that staffing problem, with the labor shortages, with all of those things. And I think that goes all the way back to, when I didn't have the gray hair, we talk about those trade schools, right? And getting people engaged in the business and interested in the industry and understanding that the money will come, right? But learn.
Yeah.
Learn it. Get good at what you do. And so managing the expectations and making sure we've got a group of happy folks around here is the biggest challenge I have day to day.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because a lot of people think, when you think of the three things, is recruit, retain, and develop. A lot of people forget about the retain and develop side of things. They think that once the person's signed on the dotted line, they're through the probation, that they're there for 500, 600 years. But actually retaining the development is probably harder than the recruitment piece. And we're going to go into the recruitment piece a little bit as well on the marketing side, but definitely the retaining and developing side, and the communication and the open honesty about career development, where you're going to see them, their career path. I think a lot of people forget about that side of it.
Well, I think you hit the word right there. It's honesty, right? And so sitting down and sometimes having tough conversations about and where somebody fits, what they do well, what they maybe are challenged with, and where they need to improve. And I think that's something that we just don't see enough of, and having the honest conversation. Sometimes they're hard to have, right? But ultimately down the road, you find that conversation led to an improvement. It led to maybe a change, somebody moving into a different department. It led to a better understanding of where somebody needed to improve. And I think ultimately that's the challenge everybody face, conflict adverse in today's society, I guess. So.
Yeah, but you've got to, as in your position, like the really good directors, mid-level, they are really good at igniting conversation and getting that sort of information out of someone, because someone could be in one position in the company and struggle a little bit. A simple conversation, you re-resource them, and before you know it, their career has taken off. They've found, and that's the beauty about construction right now. If you look, and not just pre-construction, across all of construction, you've got technology, you've got BIM VDC, you've got data, you've got pre-construction, operations, safety. There's just so many avenues.
Absolutely. I could tell you, I mentioned, you know, having a conversation with somebody I had mentored. One of the things I really enjoy is mentoring folks. I've done that over the, you know, many years in the business. But it's interesting because I could look at that list of folks that I've worked closely with, and many of them are in different roles now. But the pre-construction component of it really helped them build the foundation, whether they're in BDC, whether they're owners reps themselves now. I think that, you know, being honest and letting folks know what you're seeing and finding out where you can help them, absolutely critical in retaining good talent.
Brilliant. I love it. And we're going to go into another area on that as well, because one thing that me and you talked about back in May was the construction industry, how we market ourselves, not just to recruit good people, but also market ourselves to our clients. And I think you're going through a little bit of a passion project right now on that as well, Michael.
Yeah, indeed. I think that, we're kind of a methodical group in what we do and how we approach things. So we like to put pen to paper. We like to kind of whiteboard things together, come up with good collaboration internally to take an approach. And of course, we use third-party resources from a marketing standpoint as well to kind of help us. You know, we're construction guys, right? Not marketing folks. Although we got a great marketing team too. We've looked at this over the course of time and decided, you know, it's great to get out there. It's great to promote yourself and have your job signs up and certainly be, you know, in the business journals and social media and everything. But what we really realized, especially through our analytics, is that the targeting market works better, right? And we see more results. We see more truthful results in terms of what we get back. It's data that we can actually use when we say, look at our market sectors, and we're targeting, a senior living project or a behavioral health. We're kind of looking ahead at where those are going to be built, and then who do they need to be marketed to? And so versus just kind of plastering up some billboards somewhere, if you will, we're actually targeting specifically the folks that are involved with those projects, letting them know that we're good and making connections between them so they get an opportunity to talk about us and find out, wow, the Thomas Construction Group is great at doing this type of project. So it's really a honed in marketing approach. And it really is about our leadership group getting out there and kind of singing the praises again of our target value delivery, and how exactly we can make a project successful. So,
and it's funny, you're trying to stay ahead of the curve when you think about that. As you say, if you get a kind of a little small lead about a project, the person probably maybe hasn't got finance yet for the project, but you're already in their subconscious thinking about, right, what's it going to cost? And then are you hoping that they come to you for pre-construction services and some sort of budgeting costings?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, certainly we want to get engaged as early as we possibly can on a project, because we found, and the data points to, and we can convey this in data form to the clients, we found that the earlier we're engaged, the more successful the project is. The schedules are put together better. The subcontractors are vetted more thoroughly. And we can do that. Because we specialize in those markets in many ways, we also have the connections to point folks in the right directions, design teams, when you talk about how things are financed and et cetera. So yeah, I think that the more we target that and the more we hone in on it, in a very generic sense, it doesn't make sense to spend 50% of your marketing budget to clients that you really don't intend to work with. Right. So it's kind of what we've really started to work on is how do we target those folks? How do we best serve them? Right. How do we give them the information that is most helpful for them to make informed decisions?
Brilliant. One of the things that construction companies kind of don't understand, because it is such a, I don't want to do it injustice, but a short-term thinking thing. I mean, long-term, obviously marketing is very long. Once you think long-term with marketing, it generally comes into fruition. How long have you been doing this, and how are you starting to see ROI on it?
We are. It's been refined, especially over the course of the last 18 months. But we really started building on this plan When Chris and Jim had first talked to me about coming on board, 3, 4 years ago, it is really when they had put together a growth plan of what they wanted to do and how they targeted it, what they wanted to target and how we were going to do it. So from day one walking in, we sit in a room together all the time, of course, but with very specific and purposeful intent of how do we refine it? How do we refine it? Great. How do we do this better? How do we do that better? So it's been a work in progress. It will continue to evolve. It is, it's not something that's static necessarily because we get more data. And I would say it this way is we're really pushing on the analytics component to see what type of response we're getting. And the short answer there is absolutely. We have seen a return on it already. We've gotten feedback from existing clients as well as reach outs from new potential clients too.
Yeah, and I think being a small, well, not I don't want to say small, but a small agile team like Thomas Construction really, really is helpful because you can pivot in any direction at any one time. One meeting and you're going, right, here's what the data is telling us. This is the way we need to go right now. And as you say, like bigger companies, they have to go through certain steps, procedures, red tape. It really is an advantage to someone like Thomas.
Yeah, I think, we've been able to, as I say, it's something that's been in the works and we've been very successful doing it and doing these project types over the years. But it's really taking that data, then refining it and looking at it and saying, wow, we're really good at this project. Maybe we should focus there, right? And so that's kind of where it's born from success, but it's really about the analytics, looking at that data and what does it convey out to us and what, and looking at it saying, wow, we've got great teams for these project types. And let's continue to focus on that and emphasize that and then really hone in on those specific clients. So it's been a work in progress. It'll continue to grow for us. And we've been very, very fortunate and blessed with the backlog that's come from it.
Love it. And that's what it's all about. Once you've got the black backlog there, it's easier to recruit people. It's either easier to get a track record. It's either easier to get data and be able to show the clients the data. I find that companies that okay, you can diversify slightly, but you got to specialize and have your bread and butter in one or two, three markets.
Absolutely. 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 So, and we look to continue it not only in the Wilmington market, the Raleigh market. We're focused on the Triangle market. We've been very successful, growing into that market. And we expect to continue that growth trajectory for a while to come. And, we're actually working, kind of one of the little known secrets for us is we're working around the country for some of those clients. Some of our behavioral health clients, for example, we'll travel to Colorado, Indiana, Tennessee. We've been all over for some of them, and we expect that growth to continue.
Brilliant. And I can't wait to pop in and see you in a year's time and find out what the ROI is in all this market. And but I, listen, that to me it spiked a little bit of conversation. So within our pre-construction community here on the Pre-Construction Podcast, if anybody's got any questions for Michael or wants to kind of continue this conversation offline, where's the best place to get you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can, of course, reach me through LinkedIn anytime. You can also email me, mprit@thomasconstructiongroup.com. You can call the office here and track me down. I'm pretty easy to find and love having those conversations because one of the big things that I think, I look at is not only that do I enjoy it, but it's one of the reasons for success in the industry is the network, getting out there, getting to know folks, creating relationships. And sometimes they're good relationships. Sometimes they end up in pointing each other towards other resources, which is always a big help.
Yeah, I think it's something that we've got to get better at in the pre-construction world. There's certain industries that are really good at it. Construction need to get better at it.
Well, estimators are a unique group, some of us.
Yeah.
But I would encourage folks to get out there and do it. Join industry organizations, get out there, shake hands, have a coffee, have a beer, get to know one another, because those relationships are what's going to serve you best over the course of time. I promise you.
Yeah, Michael, we learned it in at Advance, and I'm going to Denver now in May. I think it's May 1st to May 3rd. It's in
Yep.
Denver, Colorado this year. That's Advance in Pre-Construction. If you are looking for a ticket or you're looking to go, put in podcast 10 for a 10% discount as well. But I'll be there. It was brilliant last year, and that's what it's all about: shaking people's hands and asking pointy questions to people that are really interested. And you would not believe how quickly you can quickly get a community together of geeks who just want to help each other.
That's right. Absolutely. And again, I would encourage everybody to do it. Reach out any way that I can help anybody in our Carolinas markets, or Ohio or LA or anywhere else I've built projects. I'm happy to do it any way that I can.
Michael, you're a legend. Thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on the Pre-Construction Podcast.
Gareth, always a pleasure talking. Look forward to talking again soon.
Hi, I'm Steve DeLordo, founder and CEO of Concentric, the first holistic platform for pre-construction. As a former executive officer of one of the largest general contractors in the U.S., I have experienced firsthand the challenges the industry is facing, particularly in pre-construction. Pre-construction is still a highly manual and fractured collection of processes. Essential information is kept in ad hoc, scattered spreadsheets and documents, which really limits the understanding and hides the full picture of a project for all those involved. Concentric is here to change that. Our 360-degree platform unites data, workflows, and people. With Concentric, you and your team can access real-time insights and data, assess and mitigate risk to ensure a successful project outcome, and most importantly, unlock the enormous capacity of your talent and your data. To learn more about Concentric and to book a demo, head to our website, concentric.com. That's spelled CONCNTRIC.com. Concentric, it's pre-construction recalibrated for the modern builder.
Michael Pritt, pre-construction director at Thomas Construction in Wilmington, North Carolina. It is question time. It's a speed round. First question. Favorite project?
Raleigh train station.
Love it.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Biggest lesson learned in construction?
Oh, wow. Probably stay true to the moment. You know, if I'd have focused more on doing that and purposeful in every moment, I'd have learned a lot quicker, a lot earlier.
Lovely. Great advice for the young estimators and pre-con folk out there. I like that. How do you de-stress, Michael? How do you get away from it all?
You know, golf, beach, and the mountains. And North Carolina has plenty of all three of them.
Oh, you're blessed. And well, North or South Carolina. That's amazing.
That's right.
Love it. What do you play off? Curiosity.
What's that?
What's your handicap?
Oh, well, I don't know if I can share that, but it's in that double digits.
Good, good. Favorite food?
Favorite food? Oh, wow. My wife's full-blooded Italian, so it's got to be Italian food.
Ooh, my favorite too as well. Good. Favorite sports team?
Cleveland Browns.
Love it. Now, who has been the biggest influence in your career? So if you had a mentor or someone that really was a positive impact?
I've had a lot of great, great folks that I've worked with over the years that have taught me so much, but without a doubt, it'd be my father.
Good. Love it. Last thing, Wilmington, North Carolina. Everybody knows that it's a mission of mine to get my wife to move to Wilmington, North Carolina. What is your favorite eatery within Wilmington?
Oh, wow. You know, I bounce around. I would get in trouble. You know, a very close friend is a restaurateur here. And so if I were to answer outside of or maybe Origins or something of that nature, if I said anything else, I could get in trouble.
Good man. Thank you very much, Michael.
Gareth, I appreciate it.
Well, what a start to the new year that was with Michael Pritt. A big thank you to Michael for giving up his time. As you heard on the podcast, he has left his email address and LinkedIn profile for anybody that wants a follow-up question or is interested in following up with Michael on anything. I'll drop both of those links in the show notes below. Thanks again for listening, folks, and I cannot wait to see what the future holds for the Pre-Construction Podcast in 2024. Thank you.